back in the day, cherry pie and other refreshments were part of the Fireside Lecture series held around a crackling fire. And next, Lori Ferguson Craig's going to be joining us to reminisce and share a little history. That's coming up next.
I had some ice cream on my cherry pie. So I stroll into this restaurant. Don't give me a menu, I know what I want. A cup of hot coffee with some half and half. And tell me, please, what kind of pie do you have? She says there's apple and cherry, coconut cream, lemon and chocolate and banana supreme, peach and there's berry, both poison and blue. One piece of pumpkin, what'll it be for you? I said, I'll have that cherry pie. Cherry pie, I think I'll have me some cherry pie. Pardon me, miss, I hope you don't mind. Can I have some ice cream on my cherry pie?
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. The Friday Fireside Lecture Series is a Juno tradition that goes back to 1962, an important social and cultural event that drew hundreds of people to the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, even though back then it was a much smaller facility than it is today, with a huge copper-sheathed hearth that had a crackling fire, and of course, refreshments like, as we just heard from Anchorage pie aficionado, Michael Fabian, the cherry pie song. They had cherry pie, and we'll talk about that later as part of this week's Foodie Friday. But first, Lori Craig joins us. Lori, thanks so much for joining us in the studio here today.
This is delightful, and what a perfect time to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you and see you in person, and it was really great. Rhonda McBride set up this interview. You know, every Friday I usually get to talk to someone who's going to be speaking at the Fireside Lecture, but the idea that we had was, well, let's talk to Lori about some of the history of the Fireside Lecture. And I know you've been looking through a document that tell me a little bit about the document you've been looking through that actually was written a couple of decades ago. But
it's hard to believe, 1993. Yeah. So there was a nomination, or it was to determine whether the Visitor Center was eligible for National Historic Registration status. At the time, it wasn't 50 years old, which is the requirement. It's got to be at least 50 years old. But the building has such great significance, and I did not see much about how it pursued and what happened to this. But the document outlined an awful lot of really fascinating things. And having worked there for 14 years and having spent a lot of years, like everybody else in Juneau, going there, I realized how important this building is to us. And why is it situated the where it is? And of course, the fire. And back in the early days when I started going to the Fireside Lectures, there was great big fire in there. Yeah. And it was crackling and it was noisy. And it's a huge fireplace. It's 24 feet long. And it is typical of Lynn Forrest Sr., who was the architect, is he wanted it to completely be integrated with the landscape. And being up a little higher, it gives you a completely different view, something I always recommend for people who might want to go out on the lake, either in a boat or on the ice, is come look high because you can see so much more of what's on the surface of the lake. So that was how this sort of got started. But the person who actually did all this is K.J. Metcalf. He still lives in Juneau.
Mm-hmm. I know K.J., yeah. He's amazing. Been on this show.
Yeah. Yes. You know, it's just, I think that this building just represents so much of what's good in Juneau. It's just as solid. There's staff out at the Visitor Center, like Lori Lamb, who's the assistant director, who is just as solid as the building. The Forrest family is still here. Dick and Steve, they're in their 80s. They're still here. They have the next generation of children, and I get to talk to them. So all this history is accessible to us. We've just got to get it.
Yeah.
Building was also built by Tricano and Triplett, and they're still here.
Yes.
Their kids are still here.
Right.
I think of their kids as being my age, and now we're a little old to be called the kids.
Right.
But we can access all this information, and it's really important because people care.
Now, that architect that you mentioned, is he someone that had done other Forest Service buildings or our national park buildings or other like buildings?
Yes. Lynn Forrest Sr. was the architect for the Timberline Lodge in Oregon. And in Juneau, when he came up here, he also ended up building the Ock-Bay School, the Gasno School, contributed to the federal building. So the imprint from this family is really strong. And he was also working with the Civilian Conservation Corps and restoring some totem poles, some other things. And I'm so anxious to talk to the family and find out in real detail beyond this report, which was, again, the tip of the iceberg of interest for me to find out a little bit more. But for a lot of people, they remember when the visitor center first opened, it had a little restaurant. It was called the Sidja, and we'd go up there for pie and coffee. And I remember going there in 1969, and you look out the window, those great big windows, and it was like a wall of blue ice right out in front.
Right there.
It was right there. And you just had this feeling of being so much at the glacier. But when it came time to do the firesides on my watch, I wanted to recreate what it felt like to sit in that place and chat with your friends. So that's where our Foodie Friday element comes in.
Yes, yeah.
Is Oreo cookies are really cheap at Costco. So we could afford to buy cases of them.
Yes.
And so that's why I suggested that for Foodie Friday today. And so when I first did my first firesides as the host and the organizer of the lectures, I said, well, let's see if we can make it a little bit more cozy for people. So we'd set up the coffee pot and hot cocoa. We'd get everybody all sugared up with Oreos.
Right.
And then they'd go in. And what was so much fun is you know, often in Juneau, people come to events late. They did not come to the firesides late.
Well,
they were in their chores.
Yeah, you learned quickly not to go late because you wouldn't have a – I mean, it's a sellout event.
It is. And then we expanded into the observatory, too. So they have also continued that, you know, once the visitor center got enlarged in 1999. And part of the theory behind this is let's make it welcome for locals. There's an awful lot of people who feel it's a little too crowded, you know, in the summertime. They come out with guests, but they don't experience the building. They don't experience the wonderful, the smart people we have in Juneau. I mean, we've got a bunch of people that can give us great lectures. And now with technology, we've got pictures. We can learn about whales. We can learn about soil. The lectures that had bears were always the number one because everybody loves the bears. And Mark Kelly giving photos and music.
Sure.
And, oh, everybody just swooned at the idea of, oh, it's so beautiful here. and we live here. And of course, you know, Romeo lectures. So the Oreos have gone away for now. You know, that they are a victim of COVID.
Right.
But I hope they will come back next year when we can really resume things the way we'd like them to be.
Well, you know, I wanted to just go back to the building for a moment because it's such a interesting building to be in because it's at one time historic, and it puts you in a place. But it's a futuristic. There's a futuristic element to that building too. You know, the way that it's situated, it must have in some ways. You almost think it must have been kind of a dream contract for that architect to get. You know, because it's about this viewing of this natural wonder. Right out the window at that time, right out the window, so it's so fascinating to think about. I go out to the glacier all the time and walk right by there, and just walk out to Nugget Falls, or I walk, you know, West Glacier, or I walk East Glacier, and I don't go into the building, and I'm really regretting it now, you know, because I need to go there more often.
And it is so special. So how do you take a place that a natural surrounding that's so overwhelming and make a place for humans to fit in it in the right scale, where they're comfortable, where they can sit in those windows, the window seats, the settees, and look out at it.
But also feel the immensity.
Yes.
You know, feel how large it is.
Right.
Feel the scale, but at the same time, yeah, be a part of it.
So it's situated in such a way that it's perfectly anchored between two peaks, Mount McGinnis and Bullard, that are they're within 3 feet of each other. They're 4,225 and 4,228 feet. And the design is this wide, wonderful, curved window, the idea being like an eyeball, that this is what you would see out the window. And, of course, it's changed phenomenally over time. And fortunately, the Forest Service has lots of really good documentation of what the view has done. But we're learning more about the building and have to adapt it. I mean, we needed a bigger bathroom. We still don't have big enough bathrooms.
Yeah.
But can you tuck – I mean, when you think about the bathrooms we have now, we push those into the mountain. We drilled a tunnel and put the bathrooms into the mountain so that we could still see the glacier. We did the same thing with the elevator, which is absolutely essential these days to get people up to the visitor center. It's a very discreet thing. So you're still walking in the environment, and then you have this wonderful place that's very welcoming no matter what time of year. Now the visitor center is open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 to 4. In the wintertime, and probably around sometime in April or May, it will open up every day for everyone. And part of it is, how do you fund that? One year, we did $10,000 in costs in toilet paper alone. And as federal funding is getting shifted around a little bit, how do you pay for all these things? So a few years ago, a pass system was instituted, and I highly recommend it because, you know, for $15 for the whole year, you can come in and bring a certain number of people with you. But that makes it so that we're helping to pay for this so that we can take care of garbage, we can take care of other things. And we were thinking in terms of sustainability, which we actually did very much with the fire sites. We were hauling out bags of garbage of paper cups and lids and stirrers and all those things. And so we sat down and thought, well, how can we do this better? So we had a mug drive. We asked people to bring in, you know, I'm looking here at my K2 mugs. K2 contributed a case of wonderful mugs. But people brought two or three of their own that they would maybe have recycled at St. Vincent's, and instead they brought it to the visitor center. And they would go pick out their favorite. We'd lay them all out, every fireside, and they could pick out their favorite mug and have a cup of tea or something warm. The whole idea was to encourage people, this is a homey setting. You are welcome here. We want you to be here. We want you to chat. And then when you walk into the auditorium and it's filled with people, it's just this wonderful chatter because it's people having a conversation. And to me, it felt like having a party every Friday night, but I didn't have to clean the house.
Right. Well, when you think back on some of the fireside lectures, some of the highlights, what are ones that stand out to you? Some of the most interesting or surprising or dynamic fireside lectures you've heard through the years. You might have heard more fireside lectures than almost anyone at this point.
And it's an amazing thing. One of the things that's the most challenging is convincing scientists to not talk like a scientist.
Right. Well.
And they know so much, but they're used to when they speak publicly, they're doing a presentation at a symposium. Well, you've got a whole different language when you're talking to people on a Friday night. They've been working all night long. They want to know those experiences. They want the story. I mean, if you're out monitoring baby seals on a rock where they're born or baby sea lions, they want to know what does it smell like? You know, what kind of noise do they make? How cute are they? They want that emotional connection, which is something I try to encourage scientists, which they are discouraged from doing professionally. Talk about that sort of thing. And it's really fun. I love doing the fireside lectures. I loved sitting there and making people feel at home.
Yeah. So can you think of one or two that were ones that were real standouts or that you learned something that...
Well, one of my favorite fireside speakers is Gwen Bayliss. She is a person from the Forest Service who would talk about the Arctic terns that nested right out in front of the visitor center. And that was such an important thing for us to learn. They're very sensitive birds, and yet they would nest right in front of Photo Point so that you could see them really easily. And
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, that's really cool. So that's a great one. I mean, that's something that relates directly to right where you're sitting, hearing the lecture. Right out there, right, there's these Arctic terns. We see them fly around. They're beautiful. They sort of float through the air. They're just kind of magical, the way that terns with that fork, with the kind of
forked tail.
Yeah. But the idea that, hey, we need to make sure that we're being careful and that we're, you know, observing why they're here and that they're here for a very critical and kind of fragile part of their life cycle.
Right. And then as we learn things like the cedar trees, there is a grove of cedar trees up the hilltop above East Glacier Trail. There's also a little baby tree right alongside East Glacier Trail. And every time I hike by it, I say hello.
It's about a baby cedar?
A baby cedar tree,
wow.
Yellow cedar.
Yeah.
And they tend to not grow here for different circumstances, climate-wise.
Yeah, just in little clumps here and there, right.
And Paul Hennen gave us a great lecture on it, and some other people over time have helped us to understand our surroundings. Annette Smith is a great one because she's a diver, and she'll show us all this cool stuff that's underwater.
Right.
So all those places you can't go or you can't get to for one reason or the other, people can take you there on a Friday night.
Well, that's a great segue to our next segment. Lori, thanks so much. By the way, it is Foodie Friday, so I've got a plate of Oreos here you brought in. So I'm just going to – well, it's not a plate. It's a package of Oreos.
Uh-huh. You get to eat them all, Andy.
These aren't homemade.
Well, Oreos aren't homemade.
So we can't talk about the recipe. That's, of course, that's a secret of Nabisco.
That's right.
But and do you are you a twister and scraper, or are you just a shove it in and eat it, or do you bite, or?
I like the inside better. So one of my favorite stories came from one of our assistant directors, and he said when he was a kid, he took an Oreo and showed his friend, and his friend said, "Oh, what's the white stuff in the middle?" And it turns out his mother would unscrew the cookie, lick off the white stuff, and give the kid the chocolate cookie. We don't do that at the visitor center.
That is a no-no.
What a mom, huh?
Wow. Well, you know, you got to look out for number one.
She was just testing to be sure it was okay and safe, right?
That's right. Well, Lori, Mike, and I got a mouthful of Oreo, but thanks so much for letting us know about that stuff. You are also, of course, connected to the Juneau Artist Gallery.
I am.
We're going to start talking about that in just a minute. There's a great First Friday going on at Juneau Artist Gallery, and we'll be talking to folks there. A couple of the featured artists will be on as well, but Lori, thank you so much for everything you do for the community and for everything you've done for the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center and all the years you've put in and worked there, and then all the volunteer time that you've put in as well.
And it pays me back so much more than I gave, so it's definitely worth it.
Well,
thanks so much.
I believe that, yeah. Well, thanks so much, Lori. Great talking to you.